schedule for possession of alcohol. What would you suggest, or what would be your recommendation as far as an amount for?
For bail?
Yeah, for possession.
Well, most of the people who are caught on, you know, with alcohol are not criminals. They just have an alcohol problem. So I won't make a dollar amount suggestion, but I would say that it shouldn't be set very high.
Okay.
See, Mark, how, instead of bail, or perhaps community service work, or do you think, as opposed to just destruction of the alcohol, do you think that there might be some other community service work that might be attached to that?
Well, yeah, it would be a fine, you know, which is set, I guess, and I'm not a lawyer, but what I've gathered when we've been through these meetings, and Lori talks about a uniform bail schedule, setting that as far as the fine, that would be the fine for the offense. You know, maybe $100, maybe $200. If they couldn't pay the money, then they would have to do community service in lieu of the cash fine.
That sounds good. Anyways, what would be nice is if we had trained alcohol counselors here in Selwick. You know, if we could deal with the alcohol problems, we wouldn't really have, you know, it wouldn't really be this big a problem.
Lori, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Maybe some of those people from Ambler or Selwick that came over, or Kovac, I mean. Did you guys come? Okay, we appreciate it. Because we're not going to have a chance to get over there, so it's good to have some input from the other villages, too.
My name is Truman Cleveland from Hamler, Hamler Elders. You know, we have a meeting, a Kovac meeting, and we decide to come over when we hear him in here. Because we have lots of problems about alcohol at home. Our young people, you know, they don't, when they have alcohol, they're not like the old people. They're strange, you know. We have to take care of them because they don't use good. And one more thing. A state's law we have about the home brew. That state law have that village can have a home brew made at where the man house, you know, and they can use it at home. Maybe around even 200 gallons, the way I heard, and it sure is go against us. That state laws make us more problem, but they try to go along the state law.
What that is, Truman, my understanding is a federal law that allows for up to 200 gallons of homebrew for individuals to make that. But what we would be proposing is a state law that would, if communities so chose, if Ambler wanted to vote to ban that, that they would be able to do that.
Would that be good?
Yeah, that would be good. You know, as long as we don't have much, that alcohol would be good at home. You know, it bothers at home. Especially when we're getting old, you know, when we know when somebody drink, we can't sleep. Every elders always do that. They can't sleep when somebody drinking.
That makes you worry about
that? Yeah, that makes us worry. I think that's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you very much, Truman. Appreciate you coming over.
I love his name, Truman.
Walter Douglas from Shangmac.
Good morning, Walter.
Good morning. We're having problem too down at Shangmac. About alcohol. Mostly every night, the Shangnak is dry, it's supposed to be dry, but they keep getting that whiskey from Kobuk. Kobuk is a little ways, about 10 miles out. And they order the whiskey from Kotzebue or somewhere else, and they got their whiskey up there. And when they get drunk, they start making problems. We don't want them to freeze to death between Shanghai and Kobuk. It did one time, 2-3 years ago, and we don't want that happen again. Another thing, there's the villagers up there in Kobuk, they got the whiskey, they ordered whiskey, and they sell the whiskey to the people.
Bootleggers, huh?
Bootleggers.
Is Kobuk dry?
I don't
know. What's Kobuk? Kobuk, that's wet?
Yes, it's wet.
You can't sell.
But they can import. So people order booze from Kotzebue, have it come into Kobuk, and then they go up to Kobuk.
Not
and get
really from Kotzebue. I think it's from Fairbanks somewhere, maybe from Kalina, somewhere else.
And it comes into Kobuk?
Even from Kotzebue, I think.
And then people go up to Kobuk to get it now.
Yeah.
How about homebrew? Is there much homebrew in Chungnak?
Yes, there is. They make the homebrew too in their homes. And that gave us another problem too.
Do you have a police officer in Chungnak?
Yes. There's one, we got two natives and one, what do you call it?
DPSO?
DPSO.
DPSO?
Yeah.
Two city
he's
police?
He's a Mexican. That guy, he's the only one who's able to help us. These two are not enough. We'd like to have somebody else from other villages or any kind, somebody else, even a white, colored, somebody else not from the village. Would help us more in our village.
Because they don't have relatives in or
something? Yeah. They have no relatives. These people, the cops, native, they can't work much, you know, because they are related to that village. That's why we're having problems.
Would it help if the state had a law that Chungnak could adopt that would ban the possession of alcohol and homebrew in the village?
I do understand.
If right now Chungnak can stop the importation, or the law says they can stop the importation, but we're thinking about letting villages like Chungnak have another option that they could choose in addition to that, which would ban possession, where people couldn't make homebrew and couldn't possess any alcohol. Would that help Chungnak?
Yeah, that would help Chungnak.
But it would mean that the people, there would have to be a enforcement. The police officer or someone would have to be sure that it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, isn't that correct? I mean, you can vote for it, but people can still try to bring it in. I just want to be sure you understand.
Right. One of the things these legislators are doing is trying to travel around the state and listen to the people who live in places besides Anchorage and Juneau and Fairbanks and ask the people who live in the other parts of the state what problems they see as a result of alcohol and whether they have any suggestions for what would make things better. And they're trying very hard to listen to what people say and to try to take the advice and take the knowledge and turn it into laws that can help the people. So my question to you is, you obviously have a lot of experience with life. you live in a rural community, so you know what life is like in a rural community.
Yes.
What would help you? What do you think could be done to deal with the alcohol problem?
Well, I tell you that we need the police right there to, that you can search. And these people have to work night and day. Even in the middle of the night, they have to search around the people that comes in from Cobuk or somewhere else. That would help us in our village.
Is there anything besides more police that would help? You say the law that would let Shungnuk have an election which would say alcohol is banned entirely, no homebrew, no whiskey, no nothing. You can't import it, you can't sell it, and you can't possess it. That would help?
Yes, that would help.
Is there anything else that you can think of that would help?
No, that's about all I can tell you.
Why do you say that there is a problem with alcohol? What is the problem? What's happening that makes it a problem, besides children being disrespectful?
Well, the problem is when they drink just a little bit, you know, not like the old timers. When they drink just a little bit, one sip, they start making noise. They start fighting, anything that they can do.
They hurt each other?
Yeah, try to hurt each other.
How about the little kids? Do the little kids suffer because maybe their parents are drinking?
Yes. Small kids.
You see that
they
happening?
They can't even sleep at night, you know. They are in school. So something has to be done.
Mm-hmm. In Shungnuk, what's the most serious problem that you have? Is alcohol the most serious problem?
Alcohol is our most problem we have.
Is it involved in all the other problems that occur? And just for the record, Mr. Douglas was nodding his head. I have to say that because this is a tape recorder. And we need to have your answer.
Yes, I know.
I just wondered if a lot of young people are drinking in your village.
Yes.
Walter, thank you very much. Oh, Mark, go ahead.
Quick question. Walter, how many people live in Shungnuk?
About 100, 190.
Thanks again, Walter. We appreciate you coming over.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah, please do, Ryan.
No possession of alcohol, no home brew. That new time, that was a value. So, if I can allow it for the government, you can say that.
Okay, good.
I just want to say good for that.
That's good.
Good, thank you, Rabbi.
My name is Margaret Smith. I run a small bakery here in town. First of all, I want to say that you're dealing with the Eskimo people here. We're not of your culture. We're a different culture. We function in a different manner than you do. And we don't even have the people in this town. They don't even know what the laws your government, you know, really stands for. Really, we're a different people, and you can't come in and say, okay, we'll put this law here and we'll put this law here, and you never address the fact that we're Native people. We're, you know, you have to think about us in that way first, because the majority of this region, we're all Natives. Just a real tiny fraction of them are white. And if you're going to come up with something, you have to come up with something dealing with us first, and having translators come with you and, you know, people who can talk.
Both Victoria Tickett and Roland Booth to come here and translate so that there would be a translator here. And I think that was something that was considered, number one. And number two, you should understand that this proposal to allow villages to ban possession of alcohol and to ban homebrew did not come from this group of people. It came from villagers in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta who said, we would like you to be able to pass this law. And we took their suggestion and are trying to make it legal. There are legal requirements that you need to go through in order to have that kind of law stand up in court. So we took a suggestion from a group of Native villagers on what law they wanted and are trying to turn it into a law that is legal under our state laws and state constitution. So just so you understand how this committee came into being and how the law, the suggestion that we're following up on came into being, it didn't come from this committee.
We don't want to put anything on you that the people are not going to have a voice in.
And that's
yeah,
what we're coming out.
But see, I didn't even know that you guys were coming in today. You have to make yourselves aware to the Native people themselves, and don't just go out in little meetings, you know.
But we
and
didn't.
Just,
we
passed these laws.
The word, she contacted people here before we came.
I didn't even know that. But I think that's a really important thing that should be stressed here. You're dealing with Native people, and you have to really consider us and have us in mind all the time before you make any decisions.
That's why.
And really make the people understand, because I know that most of the people, the older people, they can't understand very much English, and you can pass a law and they'll still have a hard time. You have to make it easier for the Native people to understand, and not just some lawyer somewhere, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Okay, Margaret, thank you very much. Anybody else?
Was it?
Yeah, that was
12:15.
Yeah.
My name is Catherine Brown from Ambler. I'm working as a village alcoholism coordinator, and we've been having problem in our village too on that alcohol, you know, importation. Even though they know they're not supposed to bring in alcohol to a dry town. And we've been having meetings and meetings and meetings, and we haven't come up with anything yet, but if we could have that, you know, our VPSO or our village police have that, warrant, search warrant with them all the time, then if somebody come in with a plate or a charter could go up and search them. That's what we've been hollering about, and we haven't gotten anywhere.
You don't have search warrant forms there for your VPSO?
No.
Do you get those from the district attorney in Kotzebue?
Yes.
And they haven't been sending them to you?
I'm not sure, but I haven't heard anything about it yet. But if you know, a village should be dry. They should have respect for that, but maybe they don't quite understand, or maybe we haven't, you know, helped them that much. But hopefully this new law will help them.
Right.
Is that law, and again to answer the sort of the question that Margaret raised, which I think is a serious one. One of the things that we're trying to do is find out if people want to have that law, if they think it would be workable in their community, if that would make the state system of law enforcement more responsive to what people want in the villages. Would that help an Ambler in that way, if you were able to ban possession and homebrew as well as just importation?
Mm-hmm. Because it's been so much better ever since you know, the village would drive, but once in a while they bring some booze in and have a party. But it's been more quieter ever since the village goes dry.
But the problems that you still have, the law enforcement problems you still have, are all alcohol related?
Mm-hmm.
Are there situations where the VPSO knows that somebody has alcohol, yet because he can't prove that that's the person that brought it into the village, there's nothing he can do about it.
Uh-huh.
And then those people get into trouble later on.
Uh-huh.
So that
that's
if he
the
could,
problem, too.
Right, so if he could take the booze away from them right when he found out they had it,
uh-huh.
you'd maybe prevent some of the problems.
Uh-huh. Because even if we say we saw that person, if we don't have proof, they can't do nothing about it.
If you don't have proof who imported it.
Uh-huh.
Any other questions?
I do
Lord,
have one.
Okay.
You say that you formed a committee in Amberlin?
Yeah, we have Kobuk elders meeting every month, and we talk about these problems every month.
Is alcohol one of the biggest problems
yes.
you talk about?
Yes. Alcohol and suicide.
Do you have a suicide problem there?
Yes.
How many people in the last couple of years have committed suicide?
There has been attempts. I don't know, let's see. Ever since I started working, there have been about 5 or 6 attempts.
All young people?
Mm-hmm.
Young men?
Mm-hmm. Girls.
Girls too?
Mm-hmm.
Do you...
most of them are alcohol-related and most
people get depressed when they're drinking and then try
mm-hmm.
to shoot themselves or...
Yeah, overdose or something.
Do you also see the same kinds of problems that Mr. Douglas was talking about in Shubnik with the little children?
Mm-hmm.
Staying up late and then sleeping in school and
mm-hmm.
not getting a good education and then probably having problems themselves when they get to be older?
Yeah.
You see that going on?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard so much about it.
In your discussions with the elders' meetings, have you come up for any solutions or anything that you think could happen to try to correct the problems with alcohol?
Yeah, I think we came up with some things, but I don't know how they all work. But we're still meeting about
it. What kinds of things did you come up with?
You know, like what we're talking right now about importation and that
possession, search warrant.
Search warrant.
Okay.
Catherine, thank you very much. Appreciate it. We're kind of running short of time here. Is there anybody else that wanted to testify? Okay, thank you.
I'm Robert Keegan. And
hello, Robert.
The main thing I'm concerned is I'd like to know what changes, if there's any changes you're going to make on this importation of alcohol. Or if there should be changes, how to enforce the importation of alcohol.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, the local option law right now, there's 4 options, right? Most of the villages have either taken option 3, which is banning sale only, or option 4, which is banning sale or importation. The proposed change is to add a 5th option, which would have villages be allowed to ban sale, importation, and possession, with homebrew included in the possession. But before that is introduced and a decision is made to introduce that, this committee is going around to all the villages to see if that is what the villages want to have, or if villages have other suggestions for how the law can be better and help them deal with their problems. So, based on the response that we've gotten so far, it looks like there's going to be some kind of bill that would let villages ban possession. But it depends on what people say in these hearings, what the exact proposed changes will be. And your other question was how you can help enforce importation. Some of the people who live in the villages and have to work with the law say if you could ban possession, then that would help in the enforcement because you wouldn't have to prove who brought it in, and you'd be able to get rid of the booze, which is really what most people want to do without having that hard part of the proof, which is who actually was the one who brought it into the village.
Yes, I understand that. And do you have a book of some kind that I can take home with me and read about this option? Because our meeting, the elders meeting, is set up on January 10th.
Uh-huh.
And by that time, they will want to know what's this hearing is about.
Well, do you have a telephone?
Yes.
There is no book because one of the reasons that we're having these hearings is because there's no book. The only way that you can really find out what's going on with it is to go around and talk to people and see what their experiences are. There are things that I can write down that I know about the local option law to explain it. If you give me your phone number, I will call you when I get back to Bethel after our trip, and it will probably be the end of December, sorry, because we're going to be traveling all this week and all next week.
Couldn't you send from Kotzebue the local option law that exists?
Well, I can send them a copy of the law, but there's statutes, and I mean, I'm sure Lori could help you with a copy of the statute. That's not the problem. The problem is dealing with the questions. So if I could call him, I can find out what his specific questions are and write him a letter answering the questions.
I do know that there is a booklet which Department of Community and Regional Affairs has put out describing the existing local option laws and helping communities plan for and prepare for which option they'd like to adopt. But there is nothing that would deal with what we're talking about here, what we're getting from people is the testimony and what they think changes should be.
Or you can write me a letter.
Right, I can write you a letter if you give me your phone number.
Explain this.
Right.
Here.
Why don't you tell me your phone number, and I'll call you when I get back to find out what your specific questions are so I can address specifically what your issues are rather than just writing you a general letter.
I don't have to be a phone at my home, but I think you can call Kathy.
Okay.
My phone number is 445-2190.
Okay. And your last name's Brown?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be good, Robert. We'll get something to you so you can present at that elders conference on January 10th to explain to them what we're trying to do.
Because it just isn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, I think the people should understand that this is not the end, that there will still be an opportunity when the legislature meets for there to be. Do you have teleconference in your area?
Yes.
So that we'll be sure that you hear that there's going to be a hearing so that you can know what's going on in Juneau on it.
Okay. Well, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, Robert, thank you very much. Appreciate
you
coming on.
Remember.
Okay.
I think we've got to meet our next scheduled meeting, so we're going to have to adjourn the public hearing. I hope everybody got a chance to testify.
And there's one more thing, too.
Yeah.
In addition to the teleconference, this committee is also very interested and very accepting of written testimony. And I've given the address of the committee to both Victoria Tickett and to Fred Thomas, who travels around in the villages. So if people don't want to talk in the teleconference or don't want to talk in public and want to write something down about their views on this issue, either one of those two people have the address and we'll be glad to have written testimony as well.
We'll go ahead and close the public hearing. It's 12:30 p.m. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. Okay, we'll go ahead and open the public hearing in Kotzebue. It's 12-12, December 12th, at 1:55 p.m. I understand we have the Kotzebue Police Chief with us here today.
Yes, sir.
You can come up and join us.
Have you been putting on the record who's on here?
For the record, Representative Katie Hurley, Mark Ernest, aide to Senator Sackett. I'm Representative John Binkley, and Lori Otto, who is the committee's legal counsel.
How do you do? My name is Don Bueller. I'm the police chief in Kotzebue.
Good to meet you, Don.
Thank you.
I think you understand, based on our conversation, the gist of what the committee's
interested in, and maybe you could start a narrative fashion, and the committee can ask you them questions if they need anything further this way.
I understand you're holding hearings trying to develop ways to combat the alcohol problem. I don't think only in the villages, but all over Alaska. And I understand I am here to help answer questions in the best that I can.
Right. Maybe we could get some kind of perspective on Kotzebue itself, Don, about what the situation is here. I understand that there's no regulations on the importation or the sale of alcohol. And
right. I believe we would be referred to as a wet community.
And has Kotzebue always been wet?
No, it was dry back in the early 70s to the extent that alcohol could be imported personally, but there was no liquor store. Then they went to a city liquor store, and then approximately 1972 or 73 went to a private enterprise.
I see. Maybe you could give us some perspective, Don, as far as the law enforcement side, what some of the problems that you see with alcohol consumption here in Kotzebue and alcohol abuse. Some of the crimes that are committed here, or as far as do they relate to alcohol or are they not alcohol related? Or
you have a two-part answer. If you want to say what percentage of your crimes are definitely alcohol related because the people are so influenced by what they have drank, you're talking at least 45%. But when you say has somebody involved in the situation been drinking, then the number escalates up into 85 to 90%. But for me to say that that spread in there, people have lost all judgment, things like that, that would not be fair.
All right, I see. But 85%, there's alcohol somehow involved in whatever the crime is.
Somebody, either victim, suspect, has
witness,
been drinking.
Yeah.
Whether it's one drink or totally drunk is degrees.
What has been the impact, Don, of the village? How long have you been the police chief here in the police department?
I finished 8 years. I'm starting my ninth year.
Okay, so as you know, in 1980, the legislature enacted the local option laws, which allowed the villages then to start to ban the importation and ban the sale of alcohol within those communities.
Yes, I do. I know that.
Did you see any effects on Kotzebue as that started to take place in the early 80s?
There seemed to be a small increase in the number of people that made Kotzebue their recreation center. I think the larger the community and the closer it is to mainstream transportation, people in Kotzebue get on a plane, go to Anchorage. People in the villages get on a plane, come to Kotzebue. And we become their trade center, which we are for the whole Mana region. And for a while, I think it did increase, but it seems to have leveled out. We have the same numbers approximately as the villages go from dry to wet and back and forth. The numbers seem to remain the same.
Do you have any numbers as far as those alcohol-related crimes, the people that are involved in those crimes, where they're from, whether they're from the surrounding communities or from Kotzebue itself?
Not as to the crimes themselves, but just from first-hand knowledge, I would say that most of our crimes that people are arrested for in Kotzebue, the people live in Kotzebue, and they're arrested for crimes within Kotzebue. There is a small percentage where they're visiting here and do get into problems. The numbers change when you get into protective custody. Then you're getting a fair sampling of villagers visiting Kotzebue.
Do you have any statistics on the number of protective custody intakes you have?
Well, like I explained to Ms. Otto, I didn't know what questions were going to be asked, so I had no way of researching. And I'm going by memory, but approximately 360 last year.
Do you have an idea of the percentage of those that came from outside the Kotzebue area as opposed to?
We did a survey 2 years in a row because we shortened the bar hours. Actually, it covered almost 3 years because we did a year before, the year they shortened the bar hours, and a year later. And it was approximately 40% people from outside of Kotzebue, Then the year they shortened the hours and the villages went dry. And that's just a anomaly. It wasn't planned that way. The number increased, not more than a few percentage points, like 6. I think it went to 52. And then it went back down again.
When did it go back down?
Well, we did a survey the following year, and it was back down.
Did anything change?
No, we still about had the same number of and percentages of people going through the jail, but where they were from changed a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Lori, do you have some questions?
I do. Do you also get involved in dealing with children whose parents have been drinking where they need to be taken into emergency custody? Do you assist DFYS in that?
Yes, ma'am.
About, and again, on average, how many of those cases do you get a year? Or a month, if that would be easier.
I would have to say that our juvenile problems are approximately 15% of our total workload. And those that would go to Department of Health and Social Services would probably be quite low, because we do have full-time employees here working on that, and you can go to them directly without going to the police department. So we wouldn't be aware of all the numbers. But I would say probably 40% of our juvenile, unless you want to give me an age from either that we're talking up to or down to, juvenile to adult.
Let's say up to 10 and then 10 to 18.
Okay, very few in the 10, under 10 group. Significant portion of them are in the 10 to 18. And of course now 18s are above or treated as adults.
Now these are delinquency problems. Juvenile
in some form or another, quite often dependency, not delinquency. The child hasn't done anything wrong. There's no place to put the child.
These are also situations where the children are being neglected?
To an extent, yes.
How many of those instances are the parents abusing alcohol? Do you know?
I would say that is the major reason that we get into it, is that there's abuse of alcohol or drugs. Brings the parents to our attention, and there's no one to care for the children.
What happens to those kids? Do they get put in foster homes?
We have a foster home system, and DHYS is available, or DHSS is available almost 24 hours a day. We have them on a pager system where we can tone them from the police department and get help any time of the day or night. Someone's on call.
Since you've been involved in law enforcement in this community for quite some time, have you noticed a pattern of children who you've had to care for in the context of either being neglected or getting into problems because their parents are abusing alcohol? Do you see those same children then becoming adult offenders?
There's some, but I don't know that there's a definite pattern. I think going back just my full 8 years to put some of them down, 10, 11 years old. It takes a long time to get a good accurate statistic. You could grab one out of there that would be totally inaccurate, but that is the statistic, but it really wouldn't be a long-term statistic. Mm-hmm. No, I don't readily see a lot of them going forward to become adult problems.
It happens, but it's not a pattern.
It happens. I just say it's not great big quantities.
Right. I know that Kotzebue has both a alcohol advisory board and a commission on homicide and violence.
Yes.
And I understand that, at least in the case of the Commission on Homicide and Violence, that's been created in response to some specific problems this area or this community has had with a large number of homicides, not necessarily alcohol-related homicides. And are you familiar with what both those two entities are up to?
Yes.
In your discussions with them, have you or they come to any conclusions or reached a point where you feel that there's specific things that could be done to curb the problem, conclusions on the cause or things that could be done to curb the problem?
I don't think we've come up I'm sorry, we, they have come up with definite suggestions yet. They're still looking at the problem very, very closely. But besides them, we also have the Manelik, who has their counseling staff. There's a lot more in the hospital with his counseling staff. There's more than just those two groups involved. And I think we've discovered, or at least the emergency services, police, fire, that quick response was a life-saving measure. When somebody's threatening suicide, it's not something to be ignored or waited on, and it's given its proper important perspective, and it's handled now. You don't wait for the third call. I think that lowered some of the suicide problems. They're coming back up again. It's not totally inaccurate to say that you make a gain and then that gain seems to get overrun somewhere along the line and you've got to come up with new ideas, and I think that's what these commissions are working on now, is some new ideas. Everybody in the country, I think, has worked the traditional ideas, and a lot of them aren't working. So now they're looking for new approaches anywhere, anything. Now I've lost track of the point of the last question.
The point was, have you reached any conclusions? And I guess the answer to that is no. And the second one is, have they reached a point where they're ready to make recommendations? And I understand the answer to that is no as well. In the villages that we've gone to in Northwest Alaska, a number of them have mentioned problems with alcohol-related suicides and attempted suicides, and it seems more in this area than some of the others that we've gone to. Is that a problem in Kotzebue proper as well?
Yes, I don't know of very many suicides that weren't alcohol-related. There are some specific examples of some that were not, but it would be very safe to say that most suicides are alcohol or drug related.
Is that something that's also being addressed by the two commissions, the commission and the advisory board?
Yes.
Do you get involved in domestic violence situations fairly frequently, I would suspect, if you're like the rest of the country?
I mean domestic fights.
Domestic fights.
Yes.
Assaults in the home.
Yes.
Do those tend to be alcohol-related more frequently than other kinds of crime?
I wouldn't say more frequently. They're right up there with the rest of them. Whatever the percentages are, they seem to hold fairly true throughout the whole spectrum.
As a law enforcement professional, what's your opinion of an approach to dealing with alcohol problems that hinges on prohibiting alcohol in particular areas?
I'm an old man, and I know the prohibition age, and when you start legislating morality and virtue, there's a lot of things work and a lot of things don't work. We have a heck of a problem from a law enforcement standpoint enforcing prohibition. You make a community dry, and almost without a period of time that's reasonable elapsing, they can vote again and they're wet. People here in town are trying to keep track of that. They're not going to sell to people that they know where that liquor's going to go, and it makes it real hard. The availability, the enforcement, is the airport inside the city limits, outside the city limits? Is it immune? It's state land. Does the city ordinance hold true on state property? Are search warrants from a city any good on the state airport? We have always taken a kind of a positive And I'd say we're not disappointed in some of the results. Other times, like a lot of things a police department has to do, if the people tell you, no, go get lost, you're dead, but you walk up and say, you know, if you take that to the village, you're in trouble. And quite often it doesn't go to the village. And if we take a positive attitude about it, it works. We've worked a lot of cases with the troopers, but we're also getting a lot of cooperation from the bars and the liquor stores.
How about the airlines?
I would say up to a short period of time, like a year ago, it was kind of one doing a better job than the other. But just here at a meeting of the Alcohol Advisory Board yesterday and a week ago, they were complimenting and sending letters of commendation to the airlines for the good work they have been doing. Very good work. How many more ideas can come out? I don't know, but I think you just got to try anything that's reasonable and that you know darn well the Supreme Court isn't just going to knock down the minute it's tested, because that's just that just costs everybody money. We get it tied up in the courts, and the court system can't afford it, the district attorneys can't afford it. And as long as it's got some good basis and it's worth a shot, give it a shot.
If you could do anything, if you could pass any law or take any approach, what would you do?
Suspend civil rights. I can almost stop crime, but I don't think the people would go for it, and they'd run me out of town, and they wouldn't use the rail.
Short of suspending civil rights, and you don't look like the kind of guy who'd want to do that anyhow.
Everybody, including the residents of the community, have got to get fairly uniform on what they consider serious. When a judge sits, it's easy to throw rocks at the court, and you can bet a policeman does. But when he has, by following guidelines established, has trouble putting a person in jail for a long period of time for manslaughter or rape or child molestation, and the most he can give that person is a year, and you've got an importer that maybe has been caught twice. In his mind, he's having a heck of a time equating an importer with a child molester, but yet, in all reasonableness, the importer is probably creating more of a problem. But he's not about to give that importer 2 years when the person with the molest charge is only getting a year. And you go through the community and you go through the region, and it's part of law enforcement, it's part of everyday life. The little crimes touch everybody. When somebody gets murdered, it's big news, it's notoriety, but it affects very few people. But everybody can relate to having a three-wheeler stolen, getting smacked in the face by a drunk, but the closeness of a rape victim to the rest of the community, it's not there. So there attaches a different form of importance, and everybody forms their own difference. And it's hard for it to meet. You're asking in importation and problems with liquor in the home, you take the child, and you've got to take the people to court, and the child becomes your witness. And you're trying to put the family unit back together, but you're using the family unit to testify against the family unit. You're doing the same thing with the alcohol. And I'm not saying it's bad. As a police officer, that's my job. But there's a lot of people who have trouble with that. They're not going to put their nieces and nephews, brothers, uncles, cousins, whatever you name, it's one branch of the family having to testify against the other branch of the family. And it's hard. That's darn hard. And the smaller the community, the harder it gets. Does that explanation make any sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
No, and
the smaller the village, the worse it gets. I mean, even if you're absolutely right, somebody within the family unit is going to disagree and say, there goes the only working person in the family, maybe. And they just don't attach the same import to it.
Any other questions? Don, thank you very much.
You're
appreciate
very welcome.
It. Let's see, who else do we have here today?
I'm Leslie Heber. I'm the assistant public defender in the federal law enforcement.
Great, Leslie, come on up here. Maybe you could give us your name again just for the record to make sure we've got it on there.
Leslie Hebert, L-E-S-L-I-E-H-I-E-B-E-R-T.
Perfect.
you've probably done that before. Or require or ask people to do that before.
<That's right. laughs>
This is Representative Hurley from the Mat-Su area. I'm Representative John Binkley, Mark Ernest, an assistant for Senator Sackett, and Lori Otto, our legal counsel. And did Lori get in touch with you and kind of explain to you what...
No.
Okay. Basically, we're out talking about the local option laws, just to give you a little bit of background here. And there's been a proposal by some of the villages in our area, Senator Sackett, in my own area, about adding an additional option to the now existing local options, one which would be allowing for the ban of possession of both commercial alcohol and homebrew within those communities. And we're taking testimony from villages and communities such as Kotzebue to see how people think that might affect those communities, if it would be good or bad, what some of the some other ideas might be as to how we could strengthen the local option laws. Also, if this law were instituted, there needs to be a significant amount of information and background that's involved in the decision that we make as a legislative body to substantiate what we're would be legislating, and that is to preempt personal rights to privacy. And so we need to establish a record that shows some of the significant health and safety hazards that alcohol can create in communities. And so we're seeking testimony along those lines.
Okay. That's sort of what I understood this was going to be about.
Okay.
I don't know if I have anything in particular to... It sounds like you've already covered my problem with it, which is that there's a privacy right that's going to be in conflict with trying to set up the... making possession illegal.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. I'd be curious from a public defender standpoint.
Much of what I could say, I think you've heard from Chief Bueller, which is bulk of the crime is alcohol-related, and people get hurt because of alcohol. But I would probably add, I think Chief Bueller's perspective is more that this is like other communities in many ways. I would see that this is a little bit less like, for instance, Anchorage, where I used to be located, because of the close families, there's close family ties, there's also close, the use of alcohol just seems to be so prevalent, and it's hard to impress upon you, and when I'm talking to clients, impress upon them the importance of abstaining and following the bail conditions of not consuming and that sort of thing. And it's difficult for people to follow. But I do think it is different from probably the rest of the world. There's a lot longer winter, more dark, you know, harder to have the activities, the social activities, that a lot of the traditions are breaking down that used to be in existence and that sort of thing. And I think that's leading to a lot of problems. So that the tension is there even without the alcohol. I'm not sure how many of these suicides and crimes would be committed without alcohol also. I think it's just sort of, I'm not sure that the correlation is alcohol leads to crime or whether everybody's using alcohol and the crimes tend to be committed under the influence because you're so often under the influence.
If there weren't alcohol, there'd still be the crimes.
There may still be the crimes from other social factors, but I'm not sure of that. Certainly my clients would deny that. I wouldn't have never have done that if I was sober.
Well, what's your personal perspective on the constitutional question that's involved here? Do you think that the communities...
I think it runs afoul of the privacy right. I think Alaska Constitution that's articulated that there is a privacy right unlike the federal constitution, and I think you're going to find that it's an uphill battle, but if you can link it strongly to the health hazards, then probably you have a shot. But I'm against it. I think especially the... possession in the home. I mean, there's that drug case, the use of marijuana ran afoul.
Raven.
Right, the Raven case. So I think you're going to have a problem. I would hate to see it also. I think people are already having it tough enforcing the minor consuming alcohol cases, and those are kids usually that are picked up sometimes incoherent and in blackouts. I mean, this isn't just consuming one or two beers. This is consuming a lot, and those kids... I think that the community doesn't want to throw those kids in jail, and those kids are getting criminal records, and I think their community is going to have an even harder problem having possession, mere possession, be a crime, not consuming
not a crime.
And getting into trouble.
Not a crime.
An infraction or whatever. Would it be a violation?
Civil offense.
Civil offense.
Traffic ticket.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Just like public possession of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which would be confiscation and fine.
Well, it would be up to the magistrates, right?
Uniform bail schedule.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know it would be part of the uniform bail schedule. Do you know what it would be set up?
What do you think it should be? We're gathering testimony and getting ideas from people. $100, we've had suggestions, $200. Or community service in lieu of the cash.
And can I say something, John?
You can.
Just as part of the question. One of the biggest concerns I think that many of the villagers have expressed, and one of the reasons that at least the villagers in the YK Delta came to the legislature and asked to have possession added as an option, ban on possession, is the number of cases where they were aware people had alcohol, were in a dry village,
mm-hmm.
commercial alcohol, were aware that they were drinking it, didn't know who imported it, so really couldn't do anything about it, and knew that this is going to lead to massive problems, and then watch a murder happen or a rape happen or a serious offense happen and say, we could have prevented this if we had a mechanism for enforcing what we think is the spirit of the local option law, which is to prevent people from having alcohol in the villages. So if we had some mechanism where we would be able to confiscate the alcohol and then fine the person for violating the spirit of the law,
mm-hmm.
but not give them a criminal record, that we think would help us prevent problems.
Well, I think it's a good theory, and Randy Crawford was just saying this morning that the way the troopers handle it sometimes is to, I don't know if you're going to plan to say this too, but that the alcohol is evidence of importation. It didn't get there by itself. Somebody imported it. It's an evidence of a crime of importation, and he says they'll just take it and confiscate it because it's evidence of a crime, and then you go ahead and work from there. Now, that's one approach. I mean, and the villages are small enough, so you could interview people. And if you wanted to, and you interviewed everybody, everybody's going to tell you. Basically, people don't lie up here. And if you get close enough to someone who knows who brought it in, you'll end up finding out because they'll tell you. So you really could investigate it and do it that way. But it takes a lot of time, I think.
Then I don't understand what you're... Do you agree with the spirit of the importation laws?
I think that the half the village... Okay, 51% will vote for the banning alcohol. 49% want to drink and want to import and everything, and it's tough on that 49%. I think you have trouble enforcing it just the way it is now.
But I mean, philosophically, as far as the constitutional question, you think that the importation is not a good statute that we now have on the books and should maybe be taken off the books?
I don't know if I would say you should take it off the books. I think that the idea of giving the local community the power to decide whether they want alcohol or not is fine. I think the problems that I see coming up are that you give the enforcement authority to Kotzebue for these villages. So these kids, what happens is that you make it there's a local election, and then if somebody violates the law, they go off to Kotzebue to jail, or they get sent to Nome if it's a long enough sentence. So the punishment and the enforcement courts here in Kotzebue, it's not in the village. So the whole enforcement mechanism has nothing to do with the village's desire, and the village doesn't want people to get arrested
mm-hmm.
and go away to jail for those crimes, for just consuming or possessing. Maybe.
But I'm just talking about the conflict between a person's right to privacy and the community's right to say whether or not alcohol falls into that category or not, whether it be through importation or a ban on possession. I mean, should communities have the right to say how they want to control alcohol within their community?
Well, I don't know how to answer that except for to say that the right without the enforcement ability. See, I'm not going to say that people have a right to do something without knowing how that right is enforced, because if the right is enforced in an improper way, then it's an illusory right, or else it's a right that shouldn't be granted or shouldn't be had. So I don't know how to answer that question.
But I mean, considering all the enforcement, was it within the bounds?
Within the bounds of the village?
Of the law,
yeah. I think they can do that now. I think the IRAs could pass no possession laws.
Not homebrew, though. They can't regulate homebrew under current federal law.
Is that right?
Authority to do it.
Why is that?
Because there's an exemption in federal law for 200 gallons of homebrew per couple.
Why don't you get him on the phone?
Okay. Well, it seems like it's pretty odd. I've never heard of that. So that there's really no effective way, either in state or federal or tribal law, to legally regulate homebrew right now.
Well, then I don't think probably. I mean, what's the initiative to regulate it? What's the goal to be achieved here by regulating it?
Well, the villages would say, I mean, there is no legislation right now. There is no proposal right now. What the villages say that want to be able to ban homebrew is that their purpose in passing the local option law, which they were given the right to do by the legislature, was to ban alcohol in the village. And if you just substitute people drinking homebrew for people drinking store-bought liquor, it causes the same problems, and it really is against the spirit of the local option law, which was to prevent alcohol from being in the villages.
But if there's a federal law saying they can have homebrew, I don't see how that was...
It's not covered under federal law. It could be under state law. I mean, do you think that that's a reasonable thing to let them do?
I think that if there's a... I mean, I don't see... I think it's a democracy. You can vote that. You can vote pretty much anything. I think voting on... I mean, you can't vote, like Chief Buehler was saying, to ban civil rights. I mean, you just can't do that. Even if you'd want to, and half
but
the...
But who wants
probably
to?
More than half the country would want to. Exactly.
I don't think if they really thought about it,
no,
they would.
I hope not.
They might have a... goody-goody view of human nature.
I don't know. All I can tell you is I get cases out of dry villages, just like I get them out of wet villages, and in fact, more out of the dry villages, because I get the importation cases. And I don't always get a crime associated with importation of alcohol. I often get kids that have just got minor consuming alcohol on their criminal records, 8 cases of that unassociated with other crimes, that have never tried to commit suicide, have never hurt anybody else. And those people are getting picked up, and I think those are the ones that the community is most concerned about. The people that are just...
But let me ask you this. If there were a provision in the law where communities could ban possession, city ordinance, civil offense, no criminal record, do you think that that would be used more often than some of the other ways of dealing with the problems where people would end up going to jail?
No, because the village police officers, a lot of them are associated with the troopers, and they're associated, their way of acting is to arrest somebody. They never cite anybody for anything. They always arrest somebody. So that the whole way of handling cases is they come down to Kotzebue. That's how they, I mean, that may not be true because I may not know how many times they arrest somebody without having them come to Kotzebue, but I never see a summons complaint. Let's put it that way. Rarely.
You wouldn't be involved in
complaint.
These cases.
I know what you're saying. You're saying that since, what I'm trying to say is that I think the enforcement setup there is to treat, you know, if they see consuming, if they see importation, they're going to get them for that, and then they're going to add the city citation. Okay, the city will just tack on a new city citation on top of the crimes that are already charged. And I think those are the people that are caught. Those are why cops are called. I don't think people will call because they're, I mean...
Okay. You know. I understand your point.
Leslie, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
appreciate
it.
Let's listen to
the trooper.
He's got a great story to tell.
We got plenty of time. We got lots of time.
He's got my favorite alcohol-related law enforcement story, so...
Maybe you give us your name for the record, and if you could spell it, we'd appreciate that for the grass grabber.
Randy Crawford, C-R-A-W-F-O-R-D. I'm a corporal with the troopers stationed here in Kotzebue.
Okay.
I think the story that Lori is referring to is my first experience in Bush, Alaska. I was assigned to a one-man post in Holy Cross in late 1979. While my housing was not quite done, I was sent to Antioch to work with a trooper there. He had a burglary suspect, a warrant for burglary suspect in the village of Sleet Mute. We went to Sleet Mute. It's the fall time, that drizzly, almost freeze-up time, real muddy. We started looking for people, and this town seemed to be fairly vacant. There's a lot of traffic between Sleet Mute, Stony River, and Red Devil, and folks, so lots of folks travel. As we started to go into some houses, knocking on doors, looking for folks, everybody I encountered was intoxicated. Before we were done, we walked down the street and picked kids, I'm talking about 8-year-olds on up to high school, literally picked them up and threw them in the nearest door where there was a fire burning in the house where it was warm inside. I didn't find one adult except for the health aide, 3 school teachers, and the grammar school kids that they were babysitting the school. And this was late in the afternoon, after school should have been out, that was sobering that whole community at that point. We did find our burglary suspect later also. And that was my first exposure to really severe alcohol importations into the community. That's, I have to say, that's the worst I've ever seen also. Happened to be my first time.
And that's a community that had banned importation?
That was before the importation.
Prior to the local option laws?
Yes.
How many people did you end up arresting?
We filled up the 207 we ran. A couple of them were assaults, and then we took in one juvenile that had been in serious problems and been in the Bethel youth facility several times. And Steve Widmer, who was the correct juvenile officer at the time, we talked to him, and he wanted that juvenile specifically brought in. But the most of the crime was simple assaults and criminal trespass in our presence or while we were there working on this burglary.
Have you worked in rural law enforcement?
Ever since 79. I haven't. I was stationed in Holy Cross from there. I went to Fairbanks where I worked, coordinated the Village Public Safety Officer Program for that detachment. So I worked out of Eagle, Fort Yukon, and Galena, and then out here 2.5 years ago.
What's the range of crimes that you deal with?
Everything from minor consuming to homicides.
How much of the crime that you deal with is alcohol related?
Easily 95%.
How much of the violent crime is alcohol related?
I can't remember but 1 or 2 cases that has not been, since I've been out here especially.
Did you notice any difference since you have been involved in rural law enforcement both before and after the local option law was passed by the legislature? Did you notice any difference that law made at all?
I think the communities are, there's much less violence, I think, in the communities that are dry. This is generally speaking. You know, there are exceptions. Cayana happens to be an exception. There's very little problem in Cayenne, wet or dry. Selawik, on the other hand, was dry some week, and we had more assaults in a week than we'd had in 6 months in Selawik, and they voted right back the other way.
They were wet a week or dry a week?
Wet a week. They'd been dry for some time, and they were wet, and things just absolutely went crazy, including the trooper-involved shooting out there in that period of time.
I'm not familiar with that.
There was a gun call, and it resulted in someone being shot, and it was all alcohol-related.
Do you notice any problem with people who live in dry villages coming to Nome and then being hurt, injured, lost, coming to Kotzebue and then being hurt, injured, lost, or killed going back to their village?
Yeah, we haven't had many injuries. I know there have been a couple, and I can't recall what they are. We have lots of search and rescues up here for people who are drinking and on either end. I mean, I think it's just that it's equal amount of folks drinking out there that decide to come to Kotzebue and get more alcohol as folks that come in here and load up the sled and head home. And we have the majority of those are breakdowns. And then, and a lot of the time the breakdown is because they're someplace they shouldn't have been with the snow machine, or they've taken, the other thing is they've taken a wrong trail, run out of gas, done some other thing that I don't think they may have done. They were sober. Because the drinking doesn't start when they get home. It starts generally here and on the trail. So as a matter of fact, our search and rescue's been adamant about us charging people when we can make an importation case or DWI. And they're bringing the bottles back and talking to the people on the trail when they find them so that we can make those cases.
Have you found the people from Selawik yet?
We have a search going on right now.
For 2 people from Selawik?
Right, and that was a drinking thing. We were drinking out there, headed into town.
What do you think of the proposal that has been made by some places to add an option which would let villages ban possession of alcohol, including homebrew.
I don't have any problem with an easier way to take the alcohol away when it's seen. Because besides the VPSOs, the rest of the village officers are generally untrained. And they're not the ones that are, they're going to be the ones that encounter the alcohol the most. Second, they don't have the training to know when or when they cannot seize the alcohol and work the importation from the seizure back to the seizure. So I think it would be a benefit to that extent. I certainly wouldn't want to see it possession wind up as any kind of a criminal violation that would clog the courts. I mean, we
or give people criminal records when all they're doing is possessing.
Yeah. You know, I think the intent, the complaints I hear are mostly is someone had alcohol, and we know they had it, we know they brought it here, how come you haven't done anything, or how come you can't do anything, town is dry. And that's what they generally, what generally say when they believe. And, I don't agree with Leslie that we're going to, you know, charge the other charges in addition to. We're certainly going to continue to try to make the importation case. Yes, but I don't know how this would be a less, how or where this would be a lesser included somewhere, as DWI and neg driving and everything else would be.
Do you think that it would, that kind of law would help you stop more serious crimes from happening, or is that just a pipe dream?
Oh, I think in many occasions it would, especially, you know, the village officers many times responds two and three times to the same residents and doesn't do anything except break up the fight or look at the fight that's already happened and everybody's calm, and they say don't do it again and they leave. If you responded the first time and took the booze away, that, you know, that's not going to stop the booze where the people are being quiet and minding their own business. But as soon as the disturbance starts and somebody does complain and he has reason to go there, if you were to take it at that point, you know, that's the ones we're talking about. Some reason someone has been called to that residence.
Randy, thank you very much. It's been a big help. I guess we're scheduled to go to how late, Lori?
4:30, I think. 4:30?
Mark, you're going to be here? Maybe we can just leave Mark here with the equipment and continue to take testimony, and we'll just catch that flight then, since everybody here seems to have testified and we've got that information.